So I'm going to speak just for a few moments on the theme of the crucifixion of Christ. This message is simply entitled The What and the Why of the Cross. The What and the Why of the Cross. And if you want to read the whole passage that we would have read tonight, you can read it in Luke chapter 23. I'm just going to read a few verses. Luke 23 verse 32. It says, two other men, both criminals, were also led out with Jesus to be executed. And when they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified Jesus there, along with the criminals, one on his right and the other on his left. Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing. And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. Verse 44 says, it was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 in the afternoon, for the sun stopped shining, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And when he had said this, he breathed his last. I just want to simply talk to you about the what and the why of the crucifixion. What happened at the cross? Well, Paul says this about the cross, that the cross is an offense. The cross is an offense to both the religious and the rational minds. And if you look at the crucifixion of Christ and you don't have a sense of revulsion or a sense of offense, you've not really understood the crucifixion of Jesus. Because Paul said it's a rock of stumbling. Paul says this message is not a popular message. It's a message that isn't in line with your culture. It's a message which stands above other messages. It is an offense to the natural mind. And the crucifixion of Christ, if the Sun newspaper was around at the time of Jesus' death, this would have been the biggest scandal, front page news, that the history ever could have conjured up. The scandal that the Son of God, the one who breathed the cosmos into being, would hang on a Roman cross and die. This is the biggest scandal of the whole of human history. The crucifixion of Christ. Simply what happened is that Jesus suffered probably the most excruciating, humiliating form of death ever invented by another human being. Crucifixion was invented by the Persians around 400 years before the birth of Christ. And by the time the Romans used this particular version of torture, they had perfected the art of crucifying a man. Crucifixion was considered so barbaric that they wouldn't crucify women. They would only crucify men. And for Romans, they actually wouldn't crucify their own citizens because it was considered too barbaric. They would behead their own citizens, their own criminals, but they reserved crucifixion for non-Roman criminals and the worst of criminals. And crucifixion was simply the most agonizing, excruciating form of death. In fact, our word excruciating comes from the cross, literally on the cross, excruciating. And it was a horrendous way to die. Once upon a time, the Romans crucified numbers of 6,000 men in one day. And they, what the Romans would do is that they would crucify a man in the most public place possible so that the most number of people could see your humiliation and your life slowly ebbing away. And the Romans once crucified 6,000 men from the Spartan army on a stretch of road about 120 miles long. You imagine driving from Bedford to Sheffield, and every few yards along the A1, you see a man literally in excruciating agony, naked, bleeding, dying, his life ebbing away before your eyes. And the aim of crucifixion was literally to humiliate your victim as much as humanly possible. And crucifixion was simply a slow, painful death by asphyxiation. When a man was crucified, what would happen is as he slumped on his cross, his lungs would begin to struggle to breathe for air. So he would have to push up, usually on nails in his hands and his feet, to actually fill his lungs full of air. So literally over the course sometimes of days and nights, a man would slowly lose energy until he couldn't lift his body up anymore to breathe, and he would die. Often men would literally be there for days and nights, sometimes 2, 3, 4 days and nights, dying slowly, slowly, slowly. Men would pass in and out of consciousness. It was a slow, creeping death. This is crucifixion. Men would often try and hasten their own death by deliberately slouching, which is why the Romans put a seat on the cross so that you couldn't hasten your own death. This is the death Christ died for you and I. It is the biggest scandal of human history. Christ died on a cross. Isaiah 52 says that you and I would have been appalled at Jesus, so much so that you wouldn't even have recognized his face as being human. This is the death Christ died for you. Jesus would have died on probably a recycled piece of Roman timber, weighing about 100 pounds. He probably would have carried a cross that many hundreds of criminals before him had carried. This was a cross that would have probably been smattered with the blood, the excrement, the urine, the bodily fluids of other men who died the death before him. He would have carried an excruciatingly painful piece of wood that wasn't planed, but was a rough hewn piece of timber that he would have carried on his back. And you've got to remember again that Jesus was crucified in the most public place. He was crucified in the marketplace of his day, in front of everybody. Imagine going to Tesco's to do your shopping. That's where a crucifixion would have taken place. This is where Jesus died. He died in the marketplace, where his own mother, his own brothers, his own friends watched him die in front of their eyes. It was utter humiliation and disgrace. If you're not offended when you look at the cross, you should be. It's an offense. And yet behind the events of the crucifixion, because what you find is that the gospel writers will mainly focus on what happened. As you read the rest of your New Testament, you begin to get this unveiling of why the cross happened. The gospel tells you what happened. Often what we call the epistles, the letters, tell you why the cross happened. Because behind the agony, the offense of the cross, behind it, under the surface, in the spiritual realms, God was doing something shimmering and glorious and amazing for your freedom and my freedom. He was winning a victory that at the time you would not have recognized. But actually now we live in the good of. So let me take you to the why of the cross. The why of the cross, simply by reading you some scriptures and commenting on them. Why did the cross happen? Well, number one, it happened for our forgiveness. 1 Corinthians 15 verse 3 says this: "For what I received, I pass on to you as first importance, that Christ died for our sins, according to the scriptures." This is the first why of the cross. Christ hung on a cross for your sin, for my sin. He was the divine substitute. He was the one who stood in your place and my place and took the punishment that brought you peace. That's what Isaiah says. The punishment that brought you peace was laid upon him, and by his wounds you are healed. This is the first why of the cross, that you could be completely forgiven of your sin. Past, present, and future. And for some of you who are Christians here, you are living still in shame because you think, well, Christ has forgiven me and yet I still sin. I should know better. Listen, Christ died for your sin. Past, present, and future. He paid for it all. It's all forgiven. It's all under the blood already. He's already covered your shame in his blood through the cross. John Stott writes this. He says, "Not long before she died in 1988, in a moment of surprising candor in television, Margarita Lasky, one of our best known secular humanists and novelists, said, 'What I envy most about you Christians is your forgiveness. I have nobody to forgive me.'" A famed psychiatrist called Carl Menninger said this: that if he could convince the patients in his psychiatric hospitals that their sins were forgiven, he said 75% of them would walk out that very day. I tell you, there is incredible power in knowing forgiveness from your sin. And the answer is at the cross. Christ's blood has paid the penalty so that you can be free. Here's the second why of the cross. Ephesians 2:16 says, "In one body," his body, "to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility." The other why of the cross is that he put to death hostility. Paul here is talking about division between different people groups. He's particularly talking about Jews and non-Jews. And he's saying what Christ did at the cross is he broke down the wall of barrier and hostility between people of different tribes and nations and tongues. At the cross, God has made them one. He's made one new family at the cross, which means you may well be sitting next to someone who is very different than you, but in the cross, he's made you one. You are sitting next to your brother. You are sitting next to your sister. Why? Because of the cross. He's made unity possible. He's made unity possible between people that never should have been united. I have a very good friend called John. And when he was younger, he witnessed his own father murder his mother. He witnessed that in his own home. His own father murdering his mother. And he grew up through most of his younger years and his teenage years just tormented by what he'd seen. He was totally estranged to his father, in and out of prison, taking drugs, a heroin addict, stealing so that he could pay for his habit. And one time he was in prison and suffering from heroin withdrawal, and a friend of his visited him in prison and gave him a Bible and told him about Jesus. My friend John, that night, as his friend left, he prayed in his own prison cell. He said, "Jesus, if you're real, please will you heal me?" Instantly, he felt the presence of God come on him as God delivered him from heroin addiction in his cell. And he gave his life to Christ right there and then in his prison cell. And as he got out of prison, as he began to learn what it was to follow Jesus, in the years to come, he came to a place where he was able to forgive his own father. And so much so that he went to seek his own father out and looked his own dad in his eyes and said, "Father, I forgive you." And began to reconstruct a relationship with a man that he never should have been united with. I tell you, the cross, only the cross, makes that possible. Forgiveness, unity like that is supernatural, is otherworldly. It comes from another realm. And Jesus paid for that to be possible. And can I say as politely and affectionately as possible, if you are living in unforgiveness towards another person, stop it. You are living on the wrong side of the cross. You have no right to hold on to your unforgiveness anymore because Christ has paid for it. And forgiveness is now possible because you have been forgiven. Because your debt was paid, you can release others from their debts as well. Here's the third why of the cross. Colossians 1:20 says this, "And through Jesus to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on a cross." The key word there is reconcile. Christ died that you might be reconciled to your Father in heaven. J.I. Packer and John Stott say this, that the highest blessing of the gospel is not forgiveness of sins, but the adoption of sons. In other words, the cross was God's necessary means to deal with sin so that he could achieve his real goal, which was to have you adopted into his family as his son and his daughter. The goal of the cross, the highest blessing of the cross, is that you might know God as your dad. That's why Christ died. So you could know him intimately, affectionately as your father and say, "Abba, Papa, Daddy," and know him in that intimate way as a child to a father. Reconciliation is why Christ died on the cross, so that your sin would no longer be a barrier to you knowing him. So if you're here and you're not yet a Christian, your sin, your junk, the stuff that you've done wrong, thought wrong, that's been done to you, that junk stops you from knowing God as your father right now. But I tell you, the cross makes it possible that you can know him. If you're here tonight, you can know him for yourself. You can leave this place and know him. You can literally leave this place tonight changed from when you walked in simply by saying, "Jesus, I trust in your death so that I can know you as my father." There's a Spanish story of a father and a son who'd become estranged. And the son ran away and the father set off to find his son. And he searched for months to no avail. Couldn't find his son anywhere. And finally, in a desperate last effort to find his son, the father put an ad in a Madrid newspaper. And the advert read like this, "Dear Paco, meet me in front of this newspaper office at noon on Saturday. All is forgiven. I love you, your father." On Saturday, 800 Pacos showed up looking for forgiveness and love from their fathers. Christ died so that you can be reconciled to him, your father. That's why he died. Let's skip the next one. Let's go to Colossians 2:15. Christ died to defeat Satan and demons. Colossians 2:15 says, "And having disarmed the powers and authorities, Christ made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them by the cross." At the cross, Jesus defeated Satan and all demonic forces. He won a victory. He made a public spectacle of them through the Trojan horse called the cross. You know the story of the Trojan horse? You know, that kind of smuggling in of the troops kind of through the walls. Well, the cross was God's Trojan horse. Because on the outside of things, I think Satan would have been looking at events and thinking, this is going rather well. The Son of God is dying here. This is really going rather well. And yet the Trojan horse of the cross was winning a victory that would disarm the powers of hell itself. And a man called Graham Cook says this, that if Satan realized the victory that Jesus was winning on the cross, Satan would have tried to kill everybody that was trying to kill Jesus. If he really understood what was going on in that moment, he would have tried to stop the death of Christ, because actually the death of Christ, Colossians 2 says, disarmed Satan from his power. It was the taking back of authority. It was the taking back of victory so that his victory might become your victory. He has defeated every power in heaven and on earth. And you know, when Jesus, after his resurrection, he says to his disciples, listen, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Do you know that tells me that there's someone on this planet who has no authority? If Jesus has all authority, then someone has no authority. And that person is Satan. He actually has no authority anymore. God has stripped it from him. And the enemy really is a little bit like a civilian who's posing as a policeman with a fake badge. That's what Satan is now like. He's like a civilian posing, who's gone to the fancy dress store and bought a police outfit and is posing as someone who has authority, but it's actually fake authority. And the only authority Satan really has is when you believe that he has some authority. And what the enemy will do is he will lie to you. He will try and deceive you. He'll try and rob you of your sense of confidence or identity or sense of forgiveness. But what he is a fake authority. Colossians 2 says, God has disarmed the powers, the rulers. He has made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them on the cross. That's why a man like Smith Wigglesworth, he had an encounter where one evening, the enemy turned up in his bedroom in the evening and he saw a pair of glowing red eyes at the end of his bed. I don't know what your response would be, but because he understood the truth of Colossians 2:15, he looked at this pair of red eyes and said, "Oh, it's only you," turned over and went back to sleep. Listen, Christ has won the victory. The truth is, when the enemy encounters you, he is more scared of you than you should be of him. Because every time he sees you, it reminds him of the victory that Jesus has already won. Every time he encounters you, he sees what Christ has done in your heart, which is you are fully redeemed. You fully belong to the Father. So he is actually more scared of you. I'm going to tell you, when you show up in a room, good things should happen, because the victory of Christ follows you wherever you go. Christ has done it. 1 Peter 2:24. How are we doing on our 20 minutes? We've just reached 20 minutes. Here's the last point. 1 Peter 2:24 says, "He himself bore our sins in his body on the cross so that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed." Finish with this, that Christ died for your healing. He died for your healing. I mentioned this morning, that the Greek word for salvation in the New Testament is a word called sozo, which literally means healing of mind, soul, and body. That salvation actually doesn't just include your soul, it also includes your mind, and it also includes your body. And that's why Peter, when he's quoting here, says, listen, by his wounds, you have been healed. Christ has done all that is necessary to bring freedom and restoration, whether it's mentally, spiritually, or physically. I know for certain, with the ailments that I am personally carrying, that I will not carry them for the rest of my life. Whether I'm healed in this life on earth or whether I'm healed in eternity, I know that my ailments are not going to dog me for the rest of my life, because Christ has healed me at the cross. And whether I experience that right now in this life or whether I experience it forever, actually I don't mind. But I know that Christ has won it. He's won it at the cross. And I tell you, we shouldn't always shove everything into the hereafter when actually God says, no, actually by his wounds you are healed. You should expect the breaking of the kingdom in the here and now. That is normal Christian life. By his wounds you are healed. I tell you, the cross is good news, guys. The cross is good news. On the outside, yes, it's an offense. But when you get under the Trojan horse of the cross and understand why Christ died, I tell you, it was the greatest cause for worship and celebration that you ever have. And we haven't even talked about the resurrection yet.